Echoes, Wisconsin. I am Dan Schaefer filling in for Kristen Bry, and I'm very excited to welcome our next guest. We have Ari Berman, the national voting rights correspondent at Mother Jones and the author of Give Us the Ballot, The Modern Struggle for Voting Rights in America, perhaps the nation's foremost voting rights reporter. Ari Berman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Dan. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
So you have written quite a bit about our state when it comes to voting rights and gerrymandering and a whole lot of the fundamentals that prop up our system of government here in Wisconsin. And you wrote about the really perilous position that Wisconsin was in going into this election. Now we have had the election. Tony Evers is going to stay the governor. We are going to prevent a Republican supermajority. So first, maybe you could just kind of reflect on the results there. And you know, what does this mean for Wisconsin going forward?
Well, I think Wisconsin was such an important state because Wisconsin was really on the verge of not being a democracy anymore in the way that we think about it, where you had Republicans running for governor, but also trying to get a supermajority in the legislature. And I think they would have just changed fundamentally the way elections are run and certified in the state. And that would have had ramifications way beyond Wisconsin, because Wisconsin is routinely one of the closest, if not the closest state in the country. And so I think the agenda of the GOP was very clear here. They talked about wanting, for example, to dismantle the Wisconsin Elections Commission, wanting to change voting laws. What was unique about Wisconsin is they had multiple paths to doing it. So they could have just won the governor's race outright, which is what Republicans were trying to do in a lot of states, but also, they also had this option of getting a supermajority, which was really extreme. There was really only one other battleground state, North Carolina, that had a similar situation. They also just stopped just short of getting a supermajority. But it was really amazing that they had these two different strategies, one of which was very much out in the open, defeating Tony Evers, and the other, which was more the backroom strategy, which was getting a supermajority. They failed pretty resoundingly, obviously, to defeat Tony Evers. I don't think anyone anticipated that it was going to be 3.5 points that he would win by. When I talked to the governor back in September, he said, "I'll win in a Wisconsin landslide, which will be 2 points." and he tripled his number. But people were very nervous about Republicans getting a supermajority. And I think as we got closer to the election, they became even more nervous. I mean, you were posting these statistics. It was basically even money, whether they would get one. And the fact that Democrats had an otherwise very good night in Wisconsin, but Republicans came just two assembly seats short of a supermajority, I think just shows you how skewed those legislative maps are.
Yeah, it was close. And we talked to, in the first hour of the show, we talked to Minority Leader Greta Neubauer, who in many ways was part of that Democratic effort to block the supermajority and win those key seats in La Crosse County and in Oshkosh, coming agonizingly close and a couple of other seats. But, you know, you mentioned Evers winning in the Wisconsin landslide of 3% here. What type of message does that result send, you know, considering the type of campaign that Republicans were running in Wisconsin with Tim Michaels, you know, saying all these different things about wanting to get rid of the Wisconsin Elections Commission or push it over to operate under the umbrella of the Secretary of State when they had a kind of pretty high profile Republican running for that office, which has very little power in Wisconsin as well.
Well, I think Evers was really focused on defending fundamental rights in Wisconsin. He was very focused on defending voting rights and the right to vote and having elections operate the same way they've operated for decades. And he was very focused on defending, of course, reproductive rights and other rights that had slipped away in Wisconsin. So I think he's a very middle of the road guy. He's obviously, you know, likes polka and says things like holy mackerel and is just, you know, in my opinion, couldn't be more old school Wisconsin. So I think that resonated with voters, but I also think the message of just basically, you know, defending democracy as we like to think of it contrasted a lot with what Tim Michaels said. Tim Michaels, I think, was pretty extreme. The stuff he was saying about reproductive rights was very extreme. And the stuff he wanted to do about democracy was really extreme. And I think that for much of the race, Democrats, I think, failed to define him. But But when Michael said that if I'm elected governor, Republicans will never lose another election, to me, that's when the dam broke. And we don't know if Evers would have won by 3.5 points without that comment, but that gave Democrats the exact opening they need to say, listen, Republicans are saying the quiet part out loud here. They're saying they're going to rig the system indefinitely. And you know this in terms of how the maps go, but it's confusing to explain maps to people. But then you have one sentence that just encapsulates everything the GOP wanted to do. And so I think that that quote, to me, really personified the extreme threat that was posed by the Republicans. And I think at the end of the day, that was one reason why Evers won. I mean, there was a quote from the Georgia Secretary of State recently saying this was a victory for normalcy. And I think very much that's what Evers represented, that, you know, he wanted to kind of keep Wisconsin the Wisconsin that it had been known, and Michaels was going to, who doesn't even really live in Wisconsin, was gonna radically change the state in a way that people wouldn't like.
Yeah, the final pre-election Marquette poll had it at 48-48, and so Evers outperforming that by a little bit. I do think, you know, it has something to do with that catastrophic gaffe that Michaels had in the final stretch, where he basically outlined a strategy to have the type of entrenched one-party rule that Republicans in Wisconsin seem to really want, you know, and I think that really speaks to that as well. I think Michaels, he didn't get the attention of, you know, somebody like Doug Mastriano or Kari Lake as far as this like election denying bomb thrower. But he the policies that he was talking about, to the extent that he detailed really any of his policies throughout the course of his campaign, were pretty severe and were pretty would have really upended the way that elections, you know, work in Wisconsin. And I think, you know, in that closing message, like you said, you know, that probably raised some alarms with some people.
For sure. And I think that was one reason why I thought Michaels might win, because he wasn't being defined like a flat out election denier in the way that Tudor Dixon in Michigan was, or Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania was. I mean, he was running as much more, I'm an outsider businessman, I'm going to get people back to work. And I remember when I was in Wisconsin, you know, reporting before the election, I would see these Michaels cranes everywhere. And I think, you know, he had a pitch that he was going to get, you know, union voters and kind of middle of the road workers who voted for Democrats in the past. And I think that's one reason why Trump endorsed him. I mean, he endorsed him for all the conspiracy theories, but I think he also endorsed him because he thought that was the kind of person that would win, who wasn't a creature of the establishment. But I think that the comment about the elections and also the fact that he supported the 1849 abortion ban, to me, were fatal for him. And, you know, I had a sense when I was in Wisconsin that reproductive rights was going to be a huge issue. I think Republicans badly miscalculated by refusing to modify the law, by gaveling in and out within seconds in those two legislative sessions that the governor called. I think that was viewed as extreme and extremely insensitive to women in Wisconsin. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's what killed him in the Wisconsin suburbs. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that the underperforming in the suburbs was because swing moderate Republicans voted Democrat or didn't vote at all in the suburbs, in places where they should be racking up votes. And to me, this was crazy. The fact that they couldn't just come out and say, we support exceptions for rape and incest, like just basic stuff like that. I mean, and there was a thought, you know, would the economy just take over all of this stuff? And obviously, if you look at exit pollings, to the extent that exit pollings are accurate, the economy was the top issue, but reproductive rights was right behind the economy. And the voters that cited, it's about a third of Wisconsin voters cited abortion as their top issue, and they broke 84% for Democrats, according to exit polls. So that's a massive number of people you're alienating. And I just don't think that was a smart strategy that they did. And you wonder how much the gerrymandering of the assembly helped them with the legislature, but hurt them statewide. Because in my view, the reason why they never engaged with Evers, I mean, obviously they were hoping just to defeat him with Michaels, but I also think I'm not even convinced that Voss could have gone to his caucus and got them to support a change to that law because of the districts they represent. I mean, it's clear over the last year he cannot control his caucus. I mean, the things that he's done, the way that the caucus pushed to decertify the election when Voss told him over and over it wasn't possible. I mean, so it wasn't even clear that they could have compromised if they wanted to, but it's very clear that they didn't compromise because of the impact of gerrymandering. So it's sort of like, be careful what you wish for. You can have this incredibly entrenched legislative majority that you're never going to lose, but is that going to lead you to support positions that are so unpopular that it'll then hurt your party statewide?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know for your long piece at Mother Jones that you spent some time in the suburbs. You know, I one of the things that I wrote about in my analysis of the results was how much the suburbs swung towards Democrats in this election. And I think having, you know, Tony Evers, who in his election speech dropped the holy mackerel, folks. He says he's super jazzed, and said boring wins. And Mr. Rogers is cool. That was all within like 2 minutes of Evers.
The greatest hits
victory
of Tony
speech.
Evers.
Exactly. It was just like all of it coming out at once. And you know, I think it what you mentioned about the suburban voters, it really speaks to kind of the ramifications that had statewide. I think, you know, we're going to have some folks from the Waukesha County Democrats join us in the latter half of this hour here as well. And Waukesha County is a huge example of, you know, Republicans underperforming and Democrats doing well, because typically the Republican stronghold for the state historically now is perhaps their biggest challenge because of, like, a lot of the stuff that you mentioned, the abortion issues and just the gerrymandering and the voting rights issues that I think have to be irking some people as well, as evidenced by a lot of these results here. After the break, I would like to talk to you a little bit about what some other states are doing when it comes to redistricting. I think Michigan in particular has emerged as a really important example, a state that is very similar to Wisconsin politically, maybe a tick to the left of us perhaps, but they did a lot of work to kind of reshape the fundamentals of their democracy in Michigan. So I'd love to talk to you kind of about that and what some other states are doing and, you know, kind of in Wisconsin, we can kind of focus inward a lot on these issues. I think it'd be important to get some context of what's happening elsewhere as well. So we're going to head to break now. I'm Dan Schaefer, filling in for Kristen Bry. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Dan Schaefer, filling in for Kristen Bry. I'm joined right now by Ari Berman, who is perhaps one of the foremost voting rights reporters in the country. And he is talking to us about Wisconsin's elections and some of those fundamentals of democracy in Wisconsin. And we were talking before the break about some of the changes that some other states have seen when it comes to things like gerrymandering. And other, you know, kind of voting rights principles. So in Wisconsin, it's sometimes hard to realize that we are such an outlier when it comes to our gerrymandering, our ridiculous maps, and some of the changes that we've had to voting rights over the last 12 years or so. So what are some other similar states doing right now? And in particular, what are our neighbors to the east on the other side of Lake Michigan doing with their democracy and their legislature?
Well, it's a really interesting contrast because Michigan has taken these very aggressive steps to unrig the system in a way that hasn't been done or isn't even possible in Wisconsin. Michigan was just about as heavily gerrymandered as Wisconsin was. Michigan, like Wisconsin, elected a Democratic governor in 2018, that Democratic governor has been challenged by the legislature as aggressively, if not more. I mean, Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, they tried to kill her, quite literally. So, I mean, it's the climate's possibly even worse there. But what Michigan voters did is in 2018, they passed a ballot referendum, something that doesn't exist in Wisconsin. They passed a ballot referendum to change how redistricting works so that a citizens commission, a nonpartisan citizens commission, would draw the new districts after the 2020 census. What happened as a result of that is there were many more competitive races than before, and Democrats were able to take back both chambers of the legislature in Wisconsin and hold the governor's office, meaning they'll have full control of state politics for the first time since 1984. So it was a really dramatic case study compared to Wisconsin, because Wisconsin was a place where the Democratic governor gets reelected, but Republicans have these massive, almost supermajorities in the legislature because of the rigged maps. In Michigan, it's pretty similar vote total, but Democrats are actually able to retake both chambers of the legislature because they were fairer maps, something that was never on the table in Wisconsin. So it goes to show you how much the structure of democracy affects the outcomes. People like to think that things are always up for grabs, but a lot of stuff is determined by the process. And Michigan adopted a fair process and it had dramatically different results. And it's also just interesting, you look around Wisconsin, it's now surrounded by three states with Democratic trifectas. And that doesn't mean that if Wisconsin had an independent commission, Democrats would automatically win a majority. They very well could not. But I think there'd be a lot more competitive races. And I think one would assume that maybe Republicans would get 55% of seats, but certainly not 67% or 65% of seats under fair maps.
So Democrats can win majorities in state legislatures. This is interesting. This is news to me as a resident of the state of Wisconsin, where, as we put it in our preview series at the Recombobulation Area, looking ahead at the state legislature, Wisconsin Republicans had a far better chance of getting a supermajority than Democrats had of getting a simple majority. It just really goes to show how far extreme the maps have been in Wisconsin. So it's going to be a great test case, I think, you know, to see what Michigan is able to do with a Democratic trifecta, what Minnesota is able to do with a Democratic trifecta, as a comparison to the divided government that we continue to have in Wisconsin. So looking forward as well, I think a lot of us here, you know, saw this midterm as kind of a two-parter, where we needed to reelect Tony Evers to give us a chance to continue to have a democracy in the state of Wisconsin. We were able to do that, done and done. Tony Evers gets a second term. But we will look ahead now to the Wisconsin State Supreme Court election. And we're coming up against time here, but could you maybe kind of talk about how important that is, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally?
It's going to be extremely important because the Wisconsin Supreme Court is frequently the final say on things, likely will be the final say on voting laws, redistricting maps, the state of reproductive rights, and the majority is at stake. Progressives have a chance to win the majority in the court, which would be monumental. They've done very well in recent races, although they did lose a race in 2019 that the party could have otherwise won. I think it's going to have huge ramifications because the U.S. Supreme Court is basically saying to the states, you resolve a lot of these issues. You resolve these issues over voting and redistricting. Now, of course, we'll see if that stays consistent once there's a progressive majority on the court. But nonetheless, I think state Supreme Courts are so important and so often overlooked. And this Wisconsin Supreme Court race is going to get a fraction of the attention of the governor's race or a U.S. Senate race. But you could argue it's as important when it comes to deciding all of the rights we've been talking about. So I think it's like elections never end. I'm sure people have voter fatigue in Wisconsin. But this April Supreme Court election is going to be huge. And I think, you know, both sides know that. And I imagine we're going to see an unprecedented level of money, mobilization, et cetera, on that race.
Yeah, because these are 10-year terms. These are 10-year terms that we're electing these state Supreme Court justices for. And this is going to be progressives and Democrats' best chance to win majority control, perhaps at any point this decade. I mean, you know, when we get look ahead to where the maps will be and all that, this is the opportunity. April 4th, the election next spring, and we'll be ready. We're going to be ready.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people don't think about the courts that much. And the thing is, at a national level, people feel powerless about the U.S. Supreme Court. But voters actually have power to shape these state Supreme Courts. And so if you're concerned about the future of the judiciary, and I think everyone in Wisconsin is based on what's happening to democracy and rights in the state, then I think it's really important to get out. And hopefully we'll see a high level of engagement. Hopefully we'll see a high level of voter turnout. And it could be a really seismic election in the state.
All right. Well, Ari Berman, thank you so much for joining us here on As Goes Wisconsin. If you haven't yet, I would encourage you to read his work at Mother Jones covering Wisconsin's democracy and gerrymandering. It's terrific stuff. We are headed to break here, and we will be joined after the break by the chair of the Waukesha County Democrats. Stick with us.